Let's call this committee to order. We have a quorum, and I would look for somebody to approve the minutes of March 20th. Anybody read the minutes yet?
They're great minutes. I love them.
Representative Erdahl moves the minutes of March 20th, 2017. All in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Thank you very much. Next, we have, today we're going to walk through the legacy omnibus bill, followed by public testimony. The testimony will be limited to 2 minutes each, so we want to make sure we get to hear everybody, so speed talking is permitted. And we'll have the nonpartisan staff. I will move House File 707 before the committee and recommend it be referred to Ways and Means. I will also move the DE1 amendment to get the bill in the shape I'd like to have it. And all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Fine, we got it the way I wanted it. And now we have, we'll have the nonpartisan staff walk through our bill.
Mr. Chair, I will start with the first few articles, and then Mr. Walls will take the arts article at the end. Just for time's sake, since we've gone through much of this language and appropriations already, I'm just going to go with the changes that have been made since we previously heard the bill. For the Outdoor Heritage Fund, Article 1, if you have the spreadsheet, it's, I don't know if members in the audience all have the spreadsheet here. It's a long landscape sheet. It's updated 3:30 p.m. on 3/22 of 17. For the Outdoor Heritage Fund, you'll see on...
It's included in your folders.
You'll see on line 5, the DNR, WMA, and SNA acquisition phase 9 program was reduced by $2,124,000 in the DE. Line 6, the Accelerating Wildlife Management Area acquisition phase 9 was also reduced by $2,124,000 per year. That was on line 20, you'll see the subtotal for the Prairies Division is now at $26,614,000, a total of $4,248,000 less. There are no changes in the forest. In wetlands, you will see the other changes on line 37. The Shallow Lake and Wetland Protection Program Phase 6 was reduced by $2,125,000. And on line 38, the Rim Wetlands Partnership Phase 8 was increased by $5 million. The net changes for the wetlands portion was $2,875,000 increase. Those four changes comprise all of the changes made to the Outdoor Heritage Fund since we previously heard it. On page 2 of the spreadsheet, you will see the total appropriations on line 72 for fiscal year 18 are $102,605,000. And for fiscal year 19 is $585,000. This puts us exactly at a 5% reserve on line 76. And those are the changes for Outdoor Heritage Fund. I'm just going to continue going through the other articles, and then we'll get to the language from the bill after a while. On page 3, you'll see there are more changes made in Clean Water Fund. The first change being on line 88, the Minnesota Agricultural Water Quality Certification Program was reduced by $2 million from $5 million to $3 million. On line 90 for Evergreen Agricultural Initiative was reduced by $950,000. That was it for the Department of Agriculture reductions. On line 95, for PFA, the point source implementation grants were reduced by $850,000. Some of these reductions are just a straight number reduction, and some of them are a percentage reduction, and the percentage for it is a percentage was 5%, such as line 95. On line 100, watershed restoration and protection strategies, including TMDL development, was reduced by $1,002,000. Again, that was a 5% reduction. On line 105, the Enhanced County Inspections and SSTS Corrective Actions was reduced by $362,000. Again, that was a 5% reduction. And line 108, the National Park Water Quality Protection Program was not included in this bill for a reduction of $2 million. On on line 114, the watershed restoration and protection strategies, these are under the Department of Natural Resources. Sorry, that was reduced by $198,000, and that was a 5% reduction. Line 116, the non-point source restoration and protection strategies, was reduced by $100,000. Again, that was a 5% reduction. Line 121, the aquatic management area acquisition, was not included in this bill, and that was a reduction of $2 million. And directly below that, on line 122, the Forest for the Future program, was not included in this bill, and that was a $1.5 million reduction. On line 125, you'll see the One Watershed, One Plan implementation for the Board of Water and Soil Resources was reduced by $550,000, and again, that was a 5% reduction. If you go to the next page, on the very first line, line 127, you'll see surface and drinking water protection and restoration grants was reduced by $5 million. Line 128, accelerated implementation, was reduced by $400,000, and that was a 5% reduction. On line 132, you'll see the targeted wellhead and drinking water protection program was not included in this bill, and that was $3,500,000. On line 134, one watershed, one plan, planning, water management transition, was reduced by $210,000, and again, that was a 5% reduction. On line 136, the conservation reserve enhancement program was originally at $3 million. It is not being included in the Clean Water Fund article. On line 139, Water Legacy Grants Program was $1 million per year, a total of $2 million is not being included in this article. On line 140, you'll see that grants to SWCDs for buffer requirements. This previously was not in the bill, but it's being included for $11 million per year for a total of $22 million. On line 144, the source water protection is reduced by 5% for $280,000. Line 152, the Metropolitan Area Water Supply Sustainability Support, was reduced by 5%, which is $100,000. And the last change being made in the Clean Water Fund article is on line 161, riparian protection aid payments. That is previously was not included in the bill. It is $2 million per year for a total of $4 million of spending. You'll see the net changes on the first italicized column at the end of the spreadsheet is negative 2. So this is, bill is spending, the net of all these changes is $2,000 less than the previous version of the bill. And on line 169, you will see that we're at exactly a 5% reserve the first year and $1,000 under a 5% reserve on the second year. And that is it for the Clean Water Fund article. If you go next to page 5, the Parks and Trails article, the amount available to appropriate with a 5% reserve change, so it, keeping on a 40-40-20 split, the State Parks and Trails receive $16,584,000 the first year and $18,891,000 the second year, as does the Metro Parks. And then the regional parks and trails, the grants to regional parks and trails is $8,292,000 the first year, $9,445,000 the second year. And those are, as you can see, a change from the governor's recommendations of $944,000 for state parks and trails and metro parks and $473,000 for the greater Minnesota. And you can see on line 189, we're exactly at a 5% reserve again.
Mr. Chair, continuing on page 5, we begin with the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund on line 195, the Board of the Arts. The Arts Board received just shy of $58 million. Those grants, those dollars are as follows: $44.3 million for arts grants, $9 million for arts education, $3 million for arts and cultural heritage. Also included, the Arts Board will be the fiscal agent for several grants. One is $50,000 for Arts Map application software, $500,000 for the China Garden, $750,000 for Dan Patch statues, $250,000 for Funka grants, and $75,000 for a Hmong folk art exhibit. Continuing on line 210 under the Historical Society, The Historical Society received $26.5 million for their overall programs. Mr. Chair, there's going to be an amendment later to move some money between the programs at the request of the Historical Society, so I won't go into the divisions of that those dollars now. On line 211, there's $250,000 for the historic Andrew Peterson Farm, $250,000 also for the Woodbury Miller Barn, and $100,000 for the Fort Snelling Chapel stained glass. That brings us to the top of page 6 under the Department of Education. We have $5.25 million for regional public libraries on line 220. Moving to the Department of Administration, there is $278,000 for the Big Marine Veterans Camp, $3.3 million for Minnesota Public Radio, $3.2 for Ampers Public Radio, $8 million for Minnesota Public Television, and within that $8 million, there is money for Vietnam Minnesota Remembers. Below that, there is $600,000 on line 229 for the Wilderness Inquiry Canoemobile, $3 million for Como Zoo, $1.2 million for the Science Museum of Minnesota. On line 233, there's $300,000 for the Green Giant Museum, $150,000 for the Lake Superior Zoo, $50,000 for the Minnesota State Band, $30,000 for the Rice County Veterans Memorial, $225,000 for the Minnesota Square Park Pavilion in St. Peter, $300,000 for the Lake Superior Center, and $50,000 for the Veterans Memorial. And, Mr. Chair, on line 232, there is no money included for the Talk Rock Courts, although that is included in Heritage Competitive Grants, and I believe that's in the Humanities Center. Mr. Chair, then moving down to line 254, the Minnesota Zoo, there is $3.525 million appropriated to the Minnesota Zoo. On line 257 under the Humanities Center, we start with $2.25 million for Humanities Center programs, $350,000 for Community Identity and Heritage Competitive Grants. I believe this is where the Talk Rock Courts would be funded in the second year. Mr. Chair, moving on down to line 261, we have the Minnesota Children's Museum at $1 million and $300,000 each for the Duluth Children's Museum, the Children's Discovery Museum of Grand Rapids, and the Children's Museum of Southern Minnesota. On line 265, we have $400,000 for the Minnesota Civic Education Coalition, $200,000 for the Somali Museum, and $100,000 for the Rondo Commemorative Plaza. Finishing out the Department of Administration, or excuse me, I believe this is the Humanities Center, is $80,000 for the Wheel and Cog Children's Museum. Mr. Chair, on line 274 on page 7, the Indian Affairs Council, we have $1.8 million to preserve the Dakota and Ojibwe language, $250,000 for the Magane Immersion School, and $278,000 for the Wikawi Nandagakenden Urban Immersion.
Very good, very good.
thank you. Mr. Chair, on line 286, $1 million to the Department of Agriculture for county fair grants, and $9,000 to the LCC on line 290 for the legacy website. And, Mr. Chair, that brings our total spending to $123,364,000 for the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund, and lines 305 and 307 show the projected cash balance at the end of each year in the fund and just within our 5% reserve, not target, but
goal.
Well, thank you very much. You did a very good job. Appreciate it. Janelle and Mary get to walk through the bill now.
Mr. Chair, I'm going to go through the DE1, the language parts. In the first three articles, the language has mostly been before you, so I'm just going to go through the changes from the bills that were laid over. Obviously, the numbers have changed according to the spreadsheet, but I'm just going to go over the language changes. So the first change would be on page 16. If you look at line 16.8, there used to be language that required land, that stated that lands acquired in fee may be open to hunting and fishing during the open season unless otherwise provided by law. The language as introduced said must, and then it was changed to may in the Environment Committee, and it was decided that this language would just be removed. The next change was on page 18. On line 18.26, there used to be reference to indirect costs or other institutional overhead charges. This language was removed to address some concerns of the OLA report. The next change would be on page 21. There's a new section 3. If you go to the middle portion of page 22, you'll see that there's some language requiring the Lasard Sands Outdoor Heritage Council to prioritize projects that restore and enhance rather than projects that acquire land. And then the next change would be on page 23. There's a new section 6. This is a modified version from House File 706 that statutorily requires the 5% reserve. Section 7 is a new provision. This is also in response to the OLA report that would require those requesting funds to state whether or not they've received money in the past and whether it's supplanting or substituting any previous funding. That's the end of changes for the Outdoor Heritage Fund. The Clean Water Fund article, again, I'm just going to go through the changes as from the bill that was laid over. The first change then would be on page 54. You'll see a new rider for the $11 million per year for the Soil and Water Conservation District grants, and that's on line 54.3 through 54.7. The next change is on page 57 on the bottom. There's a new section that appropriates $2 million per year to the Department of Revenue for the Riparian Protection Aid. And then on page 58, there's a new section, section 13. This, again, is from the OLA recommendations, and this would require those receiving clean water funds to also provide information whether or not they were supplanting or substituting for previous funding. On the bottom of page 59, section 14 would, again, establish a 5% statutory requirement for the reserve. Section 15 is a new section. This is a section from House File 1466 that's been modified to given the reduced funding amount, but this provides the mechanism to get the riparian protection aid out. This would go through the Department of Revenue, and it would go out to counties based on and watershed districts based on the miles of public water courses or public drainage systems that they have. At the bottom of page 61 is the Parks and Trails Fund article. The numbers were changed to reflect the new amounts that were in the spreadsheet. And then, let's see, there aren't a lot of language changes. But on the bottom of 66, there's a new section 6. This is, again, the statutory reserve requirement. Section 7 was from Representative O'Driscoll's bill that it's just modified. It extends the previous appropriation. Section 8 is a new section. This, again, would extend a previous appropriation for the Highland Bush Anderson Lakes Regional Park Reserve grant. Section 9 is from Representative Runbeck's bill for Anoka County and Dakota County to reallocate some previous appropriations. And that concludes Article 3.
Chair and members, for Article 4, the Arts and Cultural Heritage section, there aren't a lot of language changes. I would note that a few of the grants do require a matching grant, and those, the first two are on page 70, the China Garden, and each of these matching grants is up to at least 25%. The second one is a Springboard for the Arts grant for the Dan Patch statue. The next one of those is on page 79, and that is for the Tacua Courts. And the Other language change I would note is related to the Children's Museum, just directing the Children's Museums to provide for their grants to be for cultural exhibits, educational outreach related to arts and cultural heritage. And finally, the Section 3 and Section 4 of the Arts section, which is on page 83, starting at line 9. The Section 3 is the is an amendment to how the State Arts Board allocation of 47% is calculated, which is related to Section 4, which is the reserve requirement that reserves 5% of the funds, projected funds, for the appropriation.
You will not take public testimony. I had asked testifiers to limit their testimony to 2 minutes per person. Can we start out with Leanne Buck, Executive Director of the Minnesota Association of Soil and Water Conservation Districts. Leanne Buck. He's coming. Welcome to our committee. Give your name for the record and then your testimony.
Welcome, members. My name is Leanne Buck, and for the record, I'm with the Executive Director with the Minnesota Association of Soil and Water Conservation Districts. Again, thank you for the opportunity to provide input regarding House File 707, the Legacy Funding Omnibus Bill. On behalf of our members, I am conveying our concerns over the legislature's intention of funding soil and water conservation district capacity grants with clean water funds instead of general fund dollars through the Board of Water and Soil Resources. It was our understanding and expectations that after the current biennium's appropriation from the clean water funds, that the SWCD capacity funding would shift to a general fund appropriation through Bowser starting in fiscal years 18 and 19. We believe this to be a shared commitment between the legislature and the governor to invest in the soil and water conservation districts in the longer term through our ongoing general fund appropriation. And to be sure, we were funded last year again with clean water funds, but the intent and the work we have been doing as an organization and working with members of you, we see it coming from the general fund. Districts play an important role in our natural resources protection. We do voluntary work with landowners. As I say, we're boots on the ground, where our tagline is helping people help the land. And it's voluntary work that we do on behalf of all of our members and also the citizens of Minnesota. So, again, while we greatly appreciate the need for this funding to continue, there are negative consequences to the appropriation through the Clean Water Fund. And where we're concerned is that it means fewer project dollars, including project funding recommended by the Clean Water Council. Also in the bill, we do want to express our concern over the narrowing of the appropriation language to be only used for purposes of implementing the buffer law. The original purpose for these funds were to help SWCDs meet significant funding shortfalls that have hampered our capacity and our ability to serve landowners, thus the importance of this funding through the general fund. And so, again, our districts, our responsibility, I've heard over and over one size doesn't fit all in some of the conversations with the legislature, and, again, having that flexibility for the capacity for districts is key. The other piece, I guess, that I want to do is the $11 million, in essence, is the lifeblood of soil and water conservation districts. To you, this may seem like a simple shift in budgetary line items. For us, the funding is crucial for district operations and our base capacity. As I said before, helping people help the land, boots on the ground, those are our taglines, and it's our mission. And I said this the other night in front of the other committee. A mentor once told me you can tell a lot about an organization by their budget. And I think for our members, the concern that's being conveyed is that we like what you do, but we're not committed to the long-term, stable, and predictable funding source for voluntary conservation and the ability for districts to work directly with citizens. So, again, I just want to clarify.
2 minutes.
Yep. Again, just want to say in closing, thank you for the opportunity to provide input towards the Omnibus Legacy Bill, and we appreciate your past and ongoing support for Minnesota's natural resources. So thank you.
Thank you very much. Angie Bicker-Kadulka and Rebecca Flood. Welcome to our committee.
Mr. Chair, for the record, my name is Rebecca Flood. I'm Assistant Commissioner for Water Policy at the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency and chair an interagency coordination team. And with me is Angie Bicker-Kadulka. She's an Assistant Director at the Board of Water and Soil Resources. And you have some materials in your that were handed out to you, and I just want to refer you to that very quickly. The pie chart there for the governor's recommendations of $214 million for use of the Clean Water Fund compared to this bill, which is $611 million. There's also a one-page fact sheet in your handout that shows the governor's request by agency. I think if you look then at the table that includes a description of items there that we have still some significant concerns about and differences from the governor's recommendations to this bill. The first is the Minnesota Ag Water Quality Certification Program, which was developed as a regulatory strategy for reducing water quality impacts from row crop agriculture. The certification program needs $5 million over the next biennium in order to access $5 million in federal funds. If the $5 million in clean water funds are not available, we lose all of the remaining federal funds. Now, 100% of those federal funds go to directly to farmers, and 65% of the clean water funds go to our soil and water conservation districts. So in two years of piloting and 1 year of full implementation, this program has gotten more than 365 farms that have been certified, and 211,000 acres have been certified, eliminating more than 12 million pounds of sediment and more than 7,500 pounds of phosphorus going into Minnesota waters. The second item that we're concerned about is watershed restoration and protection strategies. Our agency is required to develop those for the 80 major watersheds in the state of Minnesota. So by cutting $1.4 million from this program means we will not be able to meet that statutory schedule. Our local government partners rely on the information contained within these strategy documents for the development of their own local plans, as well as Bowser's One Watershed, One Plan. And I'd like to turn it over to Angie now to take a couple minutes to describe the other impacts to CREP and other programs.
Well, can you give your name for the record, please?
Mr. Chair and members, Angie Bicker-Kadulka, Assistant Director with the Board of Water and Soil Resources. Mr. Chair and members, as we continue down that table, another cut to the House File 707, delete all, is for the targeted wellhead protection. The targeted wellhead protection and drinking water easements provide much-needed resources through the Board of Water and Soil Resources directly out to landowners to ensure that our drinking water sources remain safe into the future. The DE amendment cuts this program entirely at $3.5 million. Then the CREP, the Conservation Reserve Enhancement Program, is the voluntary on-the-ground implementation that's targeted to the most critical areas for pollution reduction. The governor's recommendations are $18 million for implementation out of the Clean Water Fund, and this bill is now zero. Between the targeted wellhead protection and the Conservation Reserve Enhancement Program, this is a total of $21.5 million removed from this fund. This program has received strong bipartisan support for its locally driven, targeted implementation, and we know that it will take all available sources to get there because funds are needed up front in order to approve applications and start the process. Then the SWCD capacity money that was removed from Bowser's general fund and added to the Clean Water Fund in the amount of $22 million. Shifting this work to the Clean Water Fund would reduce the amount of on-the-ground conservation projects and landowner assistance significantly. It also means a total of $50 million in federal CREP match that's no longer on the table. This proposal to continue the SWCD capacity funding through the Clean Water Fund is different from what the legislature passed in 2015 when it was identified as an interim measure. The 2015 legislation that was passed asked for Soil and Water Conservation District capacity funding to come from the general fund in future years. Finally, the riparian aid to counties and watershed districts for enforcement of the governor's buffer initiative was in the tax bill at $10 million a year. Now it's in the Clean Water Fund at $2 million a year, which at this amount would inhibit local governments from accepting jurisdiction.
Did you ask the Environment Committee to give any money for this?
I'm sorry?
Did you have a request into the Environment Committee to give you any money for this?
Mr. Chair, are you referring to the riparian aid?
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, the amount was to come through the Department of Revenue in the tax bill, and that was the governor's proposal.
The governor's proposal was also to get money for CREP, and we got to leverage federal money there also. That's what we were working on, and that's what we put the money into buffers for. So with that, thank you very much for your testimony.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thank you.
Wendy Paulson. Welcome to our committee. Give your name for the record, please.
Thank you. My name is Wendy Paulson. I'm a board member with Wilderness in the City, and I believe Holly Jenkins had contacted someone. I'm not sure who to cede her 2 minutes.
Can you speak in the microphone a little bit?
Is that okay?
Mr. Chair, I didn't understand who you were for.
Wilderness in the City.
Can you bring your microphone to your mouth, please?
Yes.
Thank you.
Is that better?
That's much better.
I'll lean forward. Yes. Wendy Paulson with Wilderness in the City, a nonprofit group of 501c3 based in Eagan. Chair Gunther and committee members, thank you for this opportunity. My name is Wendy Paulson. I live in Stillwater. I'm a board member for Wilderness in the City. We're a growing 501c3 nonprofit established in 2013 dedicated to preserving natural areas in urban settings. Our focus and the reason I'm here today is the Metropolitan Regional Park System, established by the legislature in 1974 to preserve high-quality natural areas. I co-chair our volunteer committee, and in the past years we've had great success building a partnership with Dakota County Parks and establishing a natural resource volunteer program for Lebanon Hills Regional Park. Prior to our efforts, there was very little opportunity to volunteer in the park, but since we've been involved, thousands of hours have been donated by volunteers to help manage buckthorn removal, garlic mustard, and other invasive species, and collecting native seeds. These kinds of activities are critical for restoring degraded landscapes and building a community of stewards, coincidentally, two of the outcomes identified by the 25-year Parks and Trails Legacy Plan. But we can't do it alone. Volunteers need help. It takes time and money as well. And cost for initial restoration is quite high. It can take years to complete, though on the bright side, once restored, ongoing costs to manage these natural resources goes down. This is different from development projects with initial high costs and increases in annual costs for maintenance and upkeep. Without a dedicated effort toward preservation, the future of natural resources in our world-class park system is dim. That is exactly the reason I and so many others supported the 2008 Legacy Amendment, conservation efforts to support parks and trails of regional significance. A legacy should leave something lasting and something to be proud of. To some, that means leveraging dollars and creating bigger buildings, more parking lots and corridors for bicyclists. Since 2010, this is how the majority of parks and legacy funds have been spent within our regional park system. These types of projects are once again prioritized in the 2018 and 2019 reports for the legacy projects. For example, federally funded multi-use bike corridor with wide clearance sight lines, which is often noted to improve accessibility, but in fact falls short of providing a comparable experience to what able-bodied visitors enjoy in our nature-based park system. A better alternative for accessibility could include trail corridors with design criteria suitable for a recreation function, not a transportation alternative. Other things in the projects have been larger buildings to provide indoor settings to connect people to nature. In truth, it's people, not buildings, that connect others to nature. Buildings don't provide our children, the next generation of stewards, with the best opportunities to experience nature and the benefits of a healthy outdoor environment. A better alternative is to promote the regional park system, including information on where the parks are, how to get there, what they offer, and programs within the parks. add to that affordable programs for nature-based recreation and education, including adaptable equipment and programs to help introduce people of all ages and abilities to new opportunities. Additional funding requests included asphalt parking lots and spaces for more cars. A better alternative would be permeable surfaces to allow more parking spaces when needed. The legacy amendment is intended to leave something lasting and something to be proud of. Based on historic spending and the current request list, that means more hard surfaces, bigger development footprints, and ongoing maintenance costs through a park system with degraded ecosystems. This is not the legacy that I or so many others intended when we voted yes for the amendment. Instead, a legacy reflective of conservation goals of the amendment and consistent with the 25-year Parks and Trails Legacy Plan would provide parklands with healthy ecosystems for year-round nature-based recreation and education opportunities, education, enhanced wildlife habitats, and otherwise develop an urban setting, and natural spaces close to home and accessible to all that offer respite from a world built around this. For these reasons, I urge you to oppose File 708, Section Article 3, Section 4, until changes are made to better reflect funding priorities and the original intent of the legacy amendment.
Thank you very much. Next, we have Catherine Zimmer. Catherine Zimmer. She had an emergency. Okay, next we'll go to Sharon Doucette. Welcome to our committee. Give your name for the record.
Thank you, Chair Gunther and committee members. Sharon Doucette, I am a Clean Water Council member representing city governments. I just wanted to take a few minutes today to let you know what the Clean Water Council thoughts are regarding this bill. The Clean Water Council wants to reiterate our support for our original budget recommendations from March 10th, 2017, which was House File 1731 as amended at the March 13th meeting. The Council reviewed clean water programs proposed by agencies and stakeholder groups over a two-year time frame with hundreds of volunteer hours being given. We sought and received comment from agencies and stakeholder groups on our recommendations. The Council received letters of support from multiple organizations for our recommendations and for our process we used to make those recommendations. The Council also did consider funding for local capacity efforts at soil and water conservation districts to help them implement the new buffer laws, but we felt that funding was needed to continue past the life of the legacy fund, and the Council thought that it was more critical and more appropriate that this need be met by general fund dollars, similar to the testimony given by the SWCDs and by the state agencies. With that, I thank you.
Thank you very much. Steve Morris. Welcome to our committee. Give your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. Steve Morris, representing the Minnesota Environmental Partnership, and I do have a letter. If I could get that distributed, that would be great. many of you saw this letter before, though, so it's not new news, but if we could distribute it, that would be wonderful. I just want to take you back a little bit, and I know not everyone here at the table was in the legislature when the legacy amendment passed, but this legacy amendment is a classic outgrowth of public engagement and public involvement that was brought forward by citizens across the state. But frankly, back 10-plus years ago, citizens were upset. They're upset because we were identifying 40% of our waters that didn't meet basic health standards, and quite frankly, we didn't know how we were going to address them. We didn't even know how we were going to test them. And citizens wanted something done. They're upset because wildlife populations were failing. We weren't doing the acquisition and the habitat work we needed in order to keep up to speed on protecting our habitat. And so people were upset. And so people came together. They moved proposals through the legislative process. They moved this amendment through the public vote in 2008. And clean water was the number one reason citizens voted to pass this amendment in 2008. Over 40% of the yes votes said just they did it for clean water more than all the other reasons put together. Now, as I showed you in the polling about last week, We have 75% of the public across the state saying they support the legacy amendment. And part of the reason, and that's up from like 56% who voted it for it in 2006, and that holds true for rural as well as greater Minnesota. Part of the reason is the public engagement and the heavy involvement in the public in the allocation of the process. I specifically want to speak to how this bill bypasses many of the recommendations of the Clean Water Council. I'm having passed out a letter from a broad coalition of groups. I think we have 27 different groups, many of them within our coalition, and many of them hunting and fishing community who are not within our coalition but who feel strongly that we need to support that extensive public involvement process. That's what brought this amendment to us. That's what resulted in citizens voting to raise their taxes in tough economic times. And I wholeheartedly ask you not to bypass the citizen process and hijack this money. But one issue I specifically want to draw attention to, as you've heard from some of the other people, is the shift of $22 million a year of legacy dollars to fund operations of the soil and water conservation districts. That was something that was done at the very end of the session two years ago as the conference committee was closing. It was a one-shot deal, we were told. The money was put into the base. And to go back on that now, I think, is a real mistake. Generally, what I'd say is the advocates kind of tolerated that last time because people understood the extenuated circumstances with the buffers. People said, okay, and it's going to put in the base. It's going to come out of general fund going forward. But to go back and undo that deal and that trust, I think creates a real problem. And it reminds me of the old adage, you know, fool us once, shame on you. And everybody said, okay. Well, we'll let this happen once, but we'll get into a more regular pattern in 2017. But to do it again, it's really a shame on us. And we can't be quiet and let this happen. It is a terrible violation of the trust the citizens put in the legislature to do the appropriations of this. And I really hope that you'll consider some of these drastic violations from the Clean Water Council recommendations. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your comments.
Well, Mr. Chair, could we just have staff, because a lot of this has to do with the moving of the money with Bowser and Clean Water and all that, could we just have staff go through for the whole bill exactly what's happening with those dollars? Because this is kind of nonsensical to me a little bit without that.
We would love to do that.
Mr. Chair, I can attempt to. I don't know exactly how much detail you want to go into. Primarily what we've heard about was the $11 million that you see on line 140, the SWCD grants for buffer requirements. In 2015, this was new. At the end of session, we put it in the Clean Water Fund. There's a number of reductions made in order to pay for it out of Clean Water Fund for 16 and 17, where we currently are. At the same time, in the Environment Finance Bill, $11 million per year was added to the base from the general fund for Bowser. It never was spent out of there. It was just added in the tails for the base going forward. And the current bills for the Environment Finance Bill, the DE has that removed, so we're not paying for it out of general fund. And it's being added here, like I said, on line 140. It's the last rider for Board of Water and Soil Resources. That's the effect of the grants to the SWCDs. I think you've also heard reference to the $18 million for CREP. That would be line... I believe the number that they're referencing for that would be line 136 on the spreadsheet, and that was in reference to the governor's number. The governor had $9 million per year from the Clean Water Fund for the Conservation Reserve Enhancement Program. The numbers I gave you earlier were based on the Clean Water Council revised recommendations, which are different, and that was at $3 million, and we completely removed that now. So that's the $18 million number you've been hearing. There's also one of the changes to the Outdoor Heritage Fund was the addition of $5 million, and that can be found on line 38, and that, I believe, program is also considered a match for CREP.
And Mr. Chair, thank you. That's helpful. So, and in the environment bill right now, what's happening with CREP? Are there any other funds going for CREP in any of our other bills and other committees? Well, at least the ones you know about.
Mr. Chair, Representative Thiessen, I'm trying to think offhand. I don't think there's anything in the environment bill currently. The LCCMR bill, the Environment and Natural Resource Trust Fund bill, has appropriation in there. It was 21 million that was in the DE. I believe that's been reduced to a little over 19 million because a couple of additions were made to the bill that took money from there. I believe that's the only money I currently know of. I know the agencies have been holding a number of appropriations from previous years that they can use as a match, somewhere in the tune of $54 or $56 million from previous funding, mostly Clean Water or Outdoor Heritage. I believe bonding is an acceptable source of funding, but I don't know of any proposals. I mean, there's proposals, obviously, but there isn't any money that I'm aware of currently.
The CREP funding was a governor's request, and it does leverage money from the federal government. And that's why we have it here, because if it wasn't here, it wouldn't be anywhere.
And Mr. Chair, so that's what I'm confused about. So you have $5 million in the bill, and is this SWDC money, how does that match up with drawing down those federal funds? This is where I get confused about all this.
Mr. Chair, Representative Thiessen, I don't know if those are used as a match. I don't know if I can get a head nod from anyone in the audience or not. They're shaking their head no that that can't be used as a match, but just goes out as base support grants to SWCDs to continue working on the buffer requirements for them to help implement those programs.
Okay. Thank you. So then in the bill for CREP, we have the $5 million. That's what you're talking about, Mr. Chair?
That $5 million is for RIM, and it's under the Lessard Sam's money.
Right. But, Mr. Chair, but that could be used for the matches.
Could be.
I think that's...
Mr. Chair, Representative Houston, it was $5 million in addition to what was already there, yes, which is the $10 million, so it's $15
million. Yes, no, thank you. Okay, and Mr. Chair, but staff maybe, so the SWDC grants are only for buffer stuff. So where are SWDCs? Where do they exist? Are they everywhere in the state?
Every county's got.
Mr. Chair, Representative Houston, yes, they are all over the state. I don't remember the exact number, if it's 80, some, or 90, or 80. 80s, 90, okay. There's 90 of them across the state. It does encompass the state. I believe the original language required a minimum of $100,000 per SWCD, and then there's a portion of the equal $9 million, and then there's $2 million worth of competitive money in there. That's how the language was originally written 2 years ago. So it goes out to base support to each one of those, at least $100,000 for them to build capacity, and the amount of capacity within each SWCD is... it varies quite a bit. Some don't have a lot of resources. Some have a decent amount of resources.
Okay. And Mr. Chair, that $100,000 base amount, does that go to everybody? And then on top of that is these capacity grants that are only related to buffers?
Mr. Chair, Representative Thiessen, the $11 million that was added was an additional $100,000 on top of whatever they have for other resources. And then there is $2 million worth of competitive money in there.
Representative Genius is next, then Torkelson, and then we will go back to testimony from the audience.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just one quick question and then a comment. Mr. Hagemeyer, did you, when I did the math on where the money was coming from, it looked to me like it was $8.8 million of the money that was taken from the recommendations of the Clean Water Council was coming basically from drinking water protection. Have you done the math on that? Or that's the math I did, and I was just wondering if you had done the same kind of math.
Mr. Chair, Representative Virginius, I have not pulled that information together, but I don't know specifically how much would go for the drinking water protection.
At some point, Mr. Chair, we should have a conversation about how that money would be spent in the various districts, including yours and mine, the drinking water money. But the other thing, the notion that this is the only way to fund CREP, I think that what the governor proposed, if I'm remembering correctly, was $20 million of bonding to pay for that. Am I right about that? Does staff know?
Mr. Bonding Chairman?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I can't answer for sure. I do have the governor's bill in my office. I could check that and get back to you on that. But I can't say for sure right now.
I think that would be helpful for us to understand, Mr. Chair, because it isn't that we have to drain some of these other funds like LCCMR and Clean Water for CREP. I think that it's not the governor's proposal. The governor's proposal is for bonding.
Okay, Representative Ferkelson.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just very briefly, I don't have my CREP notes here, but I believe the overall need for the biennium is $150 million to fully fund the state match, if I'm not mistaken. Mr. Hagemeyer mentioned the 56 or so million that's available from funds that are currently being held. That makes a portion of it. There's a variety of proposals in here. Some of these areas actually qualify for CREP, even though they aren't listed as CREP, and we could get more detail on that for committee members. And there's a potential to do some more CREP funding in the next year of this biennium, especially with Lessard SAMS funds, which are only allocated on a yearly basis.
Representative Lindley Shortwood.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just real quick, I'm honored to serve on Lessard SAMS, and I'd just be curious, Chair Torgelson, what your council, because you're on the Water Council, I think, and then are they, because I imagine I would get an earful if I, being on Lessard, if we're tweaking. I'm just wondering how, are you getting any comments on these changes, or is it all smooth sailing for you? My group carries probably more guns than buckets of waters, but...
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Lilly. I assure you my ears are filled with more than one, from more than one source.
Thank you.
Okay, with that, we will go to Colin Turner. Welcome to our committee.
Hello, thank you. Thank you, Chair Gunther and committee members. Thanks very much for giving me a brief opportunity for input. I'm Colin Turner with the Midwest Art Conservation Center. I'm here to advocate for the inclusion of art conservation in legacy appropriations. Art conservation is the protection and care and preservation of tangible visual art. This omnibus bill will have tens of millions of dollars in funding for the production of new art, but is shy of any funding in the conservation of existing art. Much like the production of new roads and bridges and other state-supported production of assets, it seems prudent to allocate at least some funding to towards preventive maintenance measures to ensure that there's continued public access and to avoid future costs. Hundreds of publicly held collections across the state could be served with preventive art conservation measures. These are collections that are already deemed valuable by those communities, and they need these services to assure that Minnesotans will have continued access.
Thank you. Representative Erdahl.
1 second. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As you know, I've been supportive of this in the past, and it just, you know, hasn't been working out. I've toured, I've seen the good work that you do, but I am assured by the Arts Board that there could be money available for you, but you are not, maybe you need to talk with them again about how, in what category you should make your request. Maybe they can help you make the request and explain to you how you could be successful. I'm not guaranteeing anything. I'm just making that suggestion to you.
Thank you, Chair Gunther, and thank you, Representative Erdahl. The Arts Board...
We're limited to 2 minutes. You can talk to the Arts Board.
Very good.
Very well. Colin Grant Wilson is next on the board. Thank you. Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Wally's coming down and getting organized. I love electronics these days because I just got a message that the governor requested $30 million of bonding dollars for CREP.
Very well. It's very helpful. Thank you. Welcome to our committee. Give your name for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Grant Wilson, for the record, Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. Thanks for the opportunity to provide some input on House File 707 and the DE1 amendment. Just have a few comments. Most of my comments relate specifically to the Outdoor Heritage Fund provisions of the amendment. First of all, just a blanket statement that this year the DNR supports the LCOHC recommendations, including the strategic acquisitions as recommended to the legislature. These acquisitions are strategic. They come to us and are promoted locally by willing sellers, often by local hunting and fishing clubs, and provide important habitat and public access, ensuring the future of Minnesota's outdoor heritage. Regarding the new provisions on line 22.14 through 22.16, DNR thinks it's important for LSOHC to be able to prioritize programs and projects that provide the best fish and wildlife habitat for Minnesotans, regardless of whether it's via protection, restoration, or enhancement. We're concerned requiring one tool over another will limit their ability to do that. Finally, just a quick note that there may be a conflict with the trails language on lines 23.2 through 23.10 with existing state rule. We've spoken with the user groups, though, and we're committed to working with them to find a solution to those potential conflicts. With that, thanks again for the opportunity to provide some input today.
Well, thank you very much. And Daryl Gerber is next.
Chair and members of the committee, my name is Daryl Gerber, and I am the Natural Resource Associate for the Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy. Thank you for the opportunity to give some input on House File 707. We'd like to highlight a little bit about what is being cut in order to move money from the general fund into the Clean Water Fund. The biggest loser in this proposal are the people that drink water, and I actually came up with a number very similar to what Representative Wagenius mentioned. And some specific examples are the elimination of a program that helps communities protect wells supplying their public drinking water systems. These communities depend on groundwater required to ensure that these wells are protected from contamination. And this funding helps them by targeting protection in those areas that are the highest risk of contamination. And this would have the biggest impact on rural communities. There are also cuts to Bowser and Department of Health programs for protecting drinking water sources. And there's also cuts to the Met Council program to work with their member communities to ensure long-term sustainability of the drinking water supplies. Agricultural programs take another big hit. This includes the Ag Water Quality Certification Program, which is a voluntary program for whole farm evaluation of farms, in which already certified over 200,000 acres, and has also recently announced a partnership with Land O'Lakes to accelerate outreach. Any cuts there are multiplied by the numerous federal dollars that are leveraged for on-the-ground installation of best management practices. There are also cuts to the Forever Green Initiative, which is working to create the next generation of crops to both protect water quality and be profitable to farmers. And these cuts threaten that work, as well as private sector partnerships with folks like General Mills and Pepsi. The other thing I'd highlight is just that there are numerous cuts to local governments, including the help for wastewater treatment plants, county septic systems, one watershed, one plan, as well as numerous other areas. So thank you for the opportunity to...
Thank you very much for your testimony. Next we have Drake Jackson. Give me a name for the record, please.
Thank you, Chair members. My name is Drake Jackson. I'm on the Minnesota Outdoor Heritage Alliance Board. I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to speak. We like to support the LSOHC recommendations. Access to public lands is crucial for sportsmen who spend $3 billion a year annually in Minnesota. Outdoor recreation depends upon habitat. what we do for habitat will improve the benefits to the outdoor industry. MOHA and its partner groups worked very hard at assuring the voters of Minnesota that the support for the legacy amendment, that the new funding would be dedicated to the maintenance and increased opportunity for Minnesota sportsmen. We'd like to thank you for the very hard work, and we urge you to support the funding recommendations of the LSOHC for the voter-approved, constitutionally dedicated legacy amendment. Thank you, Chair and Member.
Thank you very much for your testimony. And next we have John Snyder, Ducks Unlimited.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is John Snyder, Manager of Conservation Programs for Ducks Unlimited. With me is Joe Dugan with Pheasants Forever. We're here to express concerns about House File 707, the Delete All Amendment, and the ramifications it has on the three acquisition land acquisition proposals that were recommended for funding by the Lessard Sands Outdoor Heritage Council. On behalf of 45,000 Ducks Unlimited members across the state of Minnesota, I want to express concern about cuts to that type of work. Land acquisition is an extremely important tool in the conservation toolbox that we use when we go out on the landscape and try and improve habitat, specifically to try and restore and enhance habitat, especially in the prairie section of Minnesota. As the chairman knows, in southern Minnesota, there isn't much habitat and there isn't much public land. In the county of Martin, for example, 1% of the county is in public land ownership. So there's a real need from the public perspective. There's a real need from a wildlife habitat perspective. When we go out and work with landowners and landowners contact us that are willing sellers who own land adjacent to an existing state wildlife management area with drained wetlands, and they want to sell to us or sell to the DNR to restore that habitat, they've held it. Their intent is to sell it to us for the public good. That's what they want to do, and that's why they contact us to restore that habitat. This is the work we do is to acquire the rights to that land in order to be able to restore it. These are tracts of drained wetlands and converted prairie that need to be, they're pieces to the prairie puzzle that need to be put back on the landscape, strategically located around existing WMAs. And again, much of our work is in southern Minnesota where there just frankly isn't a lot of public land to begin with. These lands are, landowners are not interested in permanent conservation easement programs, so that's really not an option for their conservation. With that, I'd turn it over to Joe Dugan.
Welcome to the committee. Give your name for the record.
Joe Dugan, and I'm here representing Pheasants Forever today. Thank you. Mr. Chair, I won't reiterate much of what is said regarding the LSOHC process. It has been around now for 8 years. It's worked very well. There's legislative input, citizen input. It's been through a couple different legislative audits and with high marks. It's a great process, very transparent, and a lot of good stuff is getting done. One of the problems with the Delete All Amendment is the new mandating priorities for the council and how they work. The constitutional amendment says protect, restore, and enhance, and now prioritizing that. I guess I would like to just give you an example of how a land acquisition helped the number one employer for southwest Minnesota. You're familiar with the town of Worthington. There's a meatpacking plant just on the edge of town, JBS Meats. It used to be Swift, and before that was Armor. And my uncle was meatpacking superintendent there many years ago. That plant relies on lots of water. That water is largely drawn from the Worthington Wellhead area. The Worthington Wellhead area is around Ochitabella Lakes, which are just south of the city of Worthington. The Pheasants Forever chapter, along with the Watershed District and the city, have acquired several parcels around their wellhead. From Pheasants Forever's perspective, we call it a wildlife area. The city calls it economic reality and need. If that, the mayor, Mayor Oberlo, a few years ago, I saw him at a meeting, and I asked him, how important is this to your town? And he said, Joe, this is critical. If those, the nitrate levels are bumping up near a danger zone, they have to secure that water. So this wildlife area acquisition helped secure the water for the city of Worthington and the number one employer in southwest Minnesota. And by the way, the number one buyer of all the pork produced in southwest Minnesota. So these things all fit together, and I so tying the hands of the council on seeking opportunities for projects, I think is not a good idea, and I would speak against that. And then the other thing, and this is it's a very tough one. I know you have tough decisions to make all the time. But putting the rim wetlands in this funding package, I think probably anybody who's been around the Capitol knows how important CREP is, and we've got CREP buttons, and I'm sad to say I don't have my CREP button on today. But we need to secure the funding for that. There's a lot of federal dollars at stake. It's about $2.3 for every dollar of money that goes in. That traditionally has come from bonding. And Outdoor Heritage and Clean Water are good places for some of that money, but certainly bonding should be a major component. It has been historically. So I think as you look at the package and you have to make these tough decisions, I would certainly, we need to get some bonding dollars in there to help address this the opportunity as well as the problems. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Representative Wagenius.
Yes. Thank you. On the work you did in Worthington and putting wildlife management over a vulnerable wellhead management area, the need in Minnesota is humongous. It's about 350,000 acres, and we've done maybe 5,000 acres or something. It's very small. Do you know how much wellhead protection, where you get multiple benefits, which is what Mary Murphy always talks to me about, multiple benefits of wellhead protection and then wildlife management area. Do you know how many acres you have done over the years overlapping?
I couldn't give you a number, but there is a lot of that goes on. I'll make another example. Up by Crookston, Minnesota, there's a new National Wildlife Refuge, Northern Tallgrass Prairie, I think they call it. The city of Crookston was very interested in that. It's because they want to protect their water. And it's an economic, clean water is an economic driver for the state. We've got, there's a big packing plant in Albert Lea. They rely on lots of water. And so there's one of the things I would say as we look forward, and I think there's a letter that went around talking about land acquisitions and being strategic. I think that should be underscored because there are opportunities to marry these funds together and do great things.
Representative Wagenius, by the way, there is an effort in Worthington to recycle the water they use there.
It would be helpful if the staff for LOHC would give us the acreage where we have married the two. That would be a helpful thing to understand. They won't have that now, but could maybe do it later.
Okay. With that, thank you for your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And we have Tom Casey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Tom Casey. I'm the board chair of the Friends of the Minnesota Scientific and Natural Areas, a Minnesota nonprofit corporation set up to protect and enhance our scientific and natural areas in Minnesota. I also serve on the board of the Minnesota Native Plant Society and chair its conservation committee. I'm here to support restoring the $4.2 million that was cut on lines 5 and 6 of your budget spreadsheet and encourage you to enhance and improve the acquisition of our precious natural resources, and particularly the SNA program tries to protect the state crown jewels, the most protected, the most impressive, and the scarce and the rarest of our natural resources. So please restore lines 5 and 6 and help our habitat improve and restore our native heritage. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And next we'll open it up to, is there anyone else in the audience that would like to testify? Give your name for the record, please.
Mr. Chairman.
You got 2 minutes.
For the record, my name is Lance Ness, the president of Fish and Wildlife Alliance. Just a little bit of history for you. I've been involved with this issue for a long time, about 20 years. And somewhere in all the politics of the day, we seem to lose sight of what we were actually after. We set out a long time ago to leave a legacy for our children, what they're going to have in the future. That was the purpose. And I know there's a lot of new members and some old members, too.
Former members.
But that was the intention. And so I've asked you to put that somewhere in the back of your mind, that that's real important, that we leave a legacy for our children. It's up to you to decide where the money goes, what the projects are. But don't lose sight of the intention.
Thank you very much. Very wise word. Anyone else like to testify? Give your name for the record, please.
Mr. Chair, members, Dan Larson with the Minnesota Rural Counties. 30 rural counties in greater Minnesota, the only membership organization representative of the interests specifically of rural counties. Here today on one very specific concern today on riparian aid payments on line 161 of the spreadsheets. $2 million a year, $4 million over the biennium. And this is the revenue that counties and would be provided, as I understand it, for counties and watersheds to assume jurisdiction of buffer administration. That is a number that's well below what our members had been talking about and what our members, frankly, would consider to assume jurisdiction of buffer administration, something I think everyone to this point that has agreed would be best done at the local level. So would ask your consideration of that. Also to point out, we prefer that it come out of a different fund than clean water. So those two things, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much for your testimony.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Representative Murphy.
For Mr. Larson.
Mm-hmm. What would that different fund be?
Well, Mr. Chair, mm-hmm. Representative Murphy, in a different body, they're looking at the tax committee. I'm not sure, you know, how targets are kind of already set, but it's one consideration. I just want to reiterate, members, this is a very, very important issue in greater Minnesota. You rural members, I don't think anybody on this committee doesn't understand that. So having the amount of money that would necessitate hiring a technical person to be out there on the ground working with landowners to help administer this program at the local level, very key.
And the other person in the audience would like to testify? Seeing none, our next move is to get into the amendments.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Murphy.
Before we do that, I have a couple questions.
Love to have you ask them.
Based on the testimony that I listened to this mm-hmm. afternoon, Do
have you been having meetings with the general fund so that we could spend some general fund money rather than the monies that are in our jurisdiction?
Well, the leadership is not given any general fund dollars to spend. Consequently, I haven't had any meetings with anyone about spending them, although I can see there's a need for money. I know every one of the various segments of those legacy committee had to come up with part of their 5% money that we all agreed it was very important for the future protection of those people that get funded. So we won't have the same thing happen to anyone else that happened to Star Sam's this year, hopefully. And I know there's been some pressure put on by the governor to have money for CREP funding this year. That put a little strain on us, and we had to move some things around to get that. It's certainly the room funding we had at Lasard Sam's was not easy. And the fact that they work on the November forecast instead of the February forecast was down a little. And that put another strain on Lasard Sam. So I hope that somehow, if some money falls out of the sky from the general fund or anywhere else, I'd be glad to take it.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I thought that would probably be the answer that you have given. I expect the same thing as you don't have money. You don't have, we don't have access to the tax committee to make recommendations to them or to any of the other committees, right?
Well, that's very correct. It seems like there's a lot of places that there could have been, the Environment Committee could have funded some of the things that we couldn't fund, but you got to go with what you get.
Mr. Chair, and on this day, I haven't heard, I've been listening to the radio all day, I didn't hear anything that we're sure that there's going to be a bonding bill. We're not, as far as I know. I hadn't heard the news today that we were.
I would very much like to have a bonding bill, and I hope we do have one. And there again, that's probably even above the bonding chairman's head.
I expect. And Representative Erdahl, as the chair of the Legacy Committee for the longest period of time, there was something that you said last year at Bonding Committee that I would like you to tell me one more time, because I don't think there's some people that hadn't heard it at all. Something about cuts and something about previous appropriations through the Legacy Committee.
Mr. Chairman? Let me respond. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for the question, Representative Murphy. I'm not used to having people remember what I said from one year to the next as a former teacher. But what I tried to remind people is that there are no cuts in legacy. All of this, if you got less money than you got before, you cannot view it as a cut. This is money that you didn't have before. It's not something you should expect that you will get the same amount or more each year. This is money that, frankly, is like manna from heaven. You didn't have it before, and you shouldn't expect that you will get the same forever.
Thank you, Representative Erdahl. And Mr. Chair, from long ago when I was chair, one of the things I looked very carefully at all the way through, and I still am, and with this bill, and I want to make sure that we don't supplant. So I'm ready for amendments.
Very well, Representative Wagenius.
Well,
Just another observation about this conversation. We are still talking about inputs, dollars on the table. We should be talking about outcomes. That's what concerns me a lot about taking money from source water protection for drinking water. We have drinking water problems all over this state. I probably could go around the room district by district and tell you where your drinking water problems are. We haven't done that. We should not be funding by just moving dollars around. We should be funding by outcomes. And I want us to have that conversation later, Mr. Chair, before we wrap up this bill. But now I'm ready for amendments, too.
Very well. No other messages. First, we will start with, where's our list? We'll start with the A2 amendment. That's my amendment. And I'm going to pass around some pictures of the historic Opera House in Fairmont, Minnesota, that we found that the plaster is falling away and we have soft brick that every time it freezes and thaws, we lose a couple more bricks. And this is one of the few gathering places we have, not only for the arts, but also for community meetings in Fairmont, Minnesota. And I'm asking a pass-through through the Historical Society of $300,000 out of the $600,000 that they say is going to cost to repair this. They do have $600,000 in endowment, so they can pay for their share when they get the interest from this. And that's my amendment. And I'd like to move my what's the number of the amendment?
A2
amendment.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and you know it looks like a fine project to me. As one who has received funding twice from the Historical Society for the Litchfield Opera House, which I'm guessing has similar problems to what is being experienced in Fairmont.
Building is 102 years built in 1902, I believe.
We were 1900.
So any questions about the A1, A2 amendment? Okay, I will move the A2 amendment. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion amendment passes. Next, we have my A3 amendment, which allows Twin Cities Public Television to show the Vietnam Minnesota Remembers program out of their money. It's allows them to put the money to do this in 2017 because they're already incurring expenses from doing that. Any questions on that amendment, the A3 amendment? Seeing none, I will move the A3 amendment. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. Passes. Next, we have Representative Green, the A5 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move the A5 amendment. The A5 amendment appropriates $150,000 a year for 2 years. It's for the Riverwatch program, where young folks get involved in monitoring rivers. It doesn't say so in the bill, but there is an equal match. And if needed, I do have a testifier on this.
Okay. Any questions on the A5 amendment for the Riverwatch? Seeing none, all in favor of the A5 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign, passes. Next, we have the A6 amendment. Representative Thiessen withdraws it. I think it's a good amendment. I appreciate it. I think we have watched in this committee us go a long ways towards getting what you wanted to accomplish in this amendment.
That's a different one.
Oh, a different one? Okay. Yeah. This is a different one. We got that one to look forward to yet. Very well.
Coming next.
Next. You're right. Next, Representative Peason.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I'd move the A9. I think that's what you, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
So, members, this is, we've had some discussion around this a little bit and lots of questions. This is really coming out of largely from conversations I've had with some of the groups, the children's museums in particular, and the Como Zoo, who do a lot of work to who are actually kind of implementing this kind of program already. So this basically says if you're an entity receiving over $1 million from the arts and only from Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund, that you used to have to use part of that money to create measurable goals and outcomes to increase access to programming and reduce disparities, and that you designate an employee who's going to be responsible for fulfilling that. You know, I think we did hear a lot of testimony here that people talk about doing this and probably are doing a lot of this, but a lot of it's just anecdotal. And I just think it would be helpful for these organizations to actually, you know, be a little bit more deliberate about doing that and thinking about it and then having information available for us when we come down. The Humanities Center sent me a letter supporting this. They're one of the folks that gets over $1 million. And I haven't heard really any objection from the large groups. So I imagine most of these folks getting over $1 million probably do something like this already. But I just think it's a very, very small step in pushing us towards being more deliberate about thinking about not just the outcomes on the, you know, similar to what Representative Wagenius is talking about, although this doesn't deal with any of those funds, but starting to think about and measure our work on making sure that we're using our money here to increase access, you know, for poverty, geography, you know, other disparities, and to reduce those disparities, use these monies to start to reduce those disparities. So I'd appreciate folks' support.
Any other discussion on the A9 amendment? I have one question. Everybody that gets over $1 million has to send in a report talking about the disparities.
What?
Go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. What they have set as goals and how they move towards those goals. That's what it would be. And it would be, yeah. Yes.
Okay. Any other discussion on the A9 amendment? I think it has some merit. Thank you. All in favor of the A9 amendment, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. Passes.
Thank you.
The A11 amendment. What's this one? This shifts some money within the Historical Society in order to better meet their needs. This change was requested by the Historical Society, and if you have any questions about it, we can get David Kelleher down here to tell you about it. But I think it's something they want to do with their money, and I see no problem with having this amendment passed. Any discussion about it? All in favor of the A11 amendment, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Representative Lilly, you have the A12 amendment?
Is that the... I'm withdrawing it? Oh.
No, this is a different one.
I don't see it. Where is it?
Here.
Somebody have one? Mr. Chair, members, my amendment dedicates money from the humanities program towards the Minnesota Council on Disability for digital archive collection. It's about $55,000 in the first year, I believe, Mr. Chair.
Any discussion?
Thank you to the Republican notes.
We tried a comedy. All in favor? Any discussion on this amendment?
Bipartisan.
Seeing none? Yeah. I move the, Representative Lilly moves the A-12.
Thank you, Mr.
Amendment. All in favor of that motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion passes. Next, Representative Wills, the A-13 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And the A-13 amendment adds an additional $100,000 to the Minnesota Zoo's allotment for the first year of the biennium. So it increases it to $1,775,000 for the first year.
Any discussion about the A-13 amendment? Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Wills. I just usually there's kind of been like a peace treaty amongst the zoos, and so the Minnesota Zoo hasn't attacked the Duluth Zoo or Como, and I'm not saying that it's not a merited or worthy case. It's just traditionally, so I'm a little uncomfortable, but I'm sure they're all doing good programs at both of them, but I wish you'd have went after Torrelson's clean water money or something instead.
Wrong fund.
Yeah. Worth a try.
They drink water.
Hurdall.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and well, I'm sure this is a fine amendment. Before I vote, I just want to go on record as saying that I really do like Como.
I think we won't put that up for a vote. Anything else? Any other discussion about this? It does make the Como Zoo and the Minnesota Zoo both get cut the same amount of money. So if you want to look at that as a fairness amendment, you can. And with that, Representative Wills, would you like to move your amendment?
So moved, Mr. Chair. And just a comment, it would put both of them at 3.33% less than what each zoo requested. So in that sense, I was trying to be as fair as I could, and I had to stay within certain funds. So it's a tough choice to make, and I'm hoping that in conference we can find a better way to fund the additional $100,000 from the Minnesota Zoo, but wanted to get this done today if we could.
As Mr. Morris knows, there's no end to the creativity of the Senate. With that, Representative Wills renews her motion to have the A-13 amendment pass. All in favor of that motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same size. Sign. Passes. What do we got next? Members' discussion on the bill as amended. Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, I received a call at about 10 after 12 from somebody in the Department of Administration about offering an amendment, and I said we had to have our amendments in Friday, and so but I was wondering if the project that the archaeologist wanted for those bones to be returned, is that a grant that is that a project that there could be a grant from the Historical Society for? And maybe if somebody from the Historical Society is here.
Mr. Kelleher, would you like to make a comment on that? I remember the bones were from 2000 and early 2000.
Yeah, they were The State Archaeologist's Office has in storage bones that have been recovered from various places, I guess, throughout the state. And does that go in one of the programs that perhaps a grant could be applied for?
Mr. Chair, David Kelleher from the Minnesota Historical Society. Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, I believe it would be, but I would like to double check with our grants office staff to just make sure. And I heard the presentation on that project, and it's a good project, and it's something that the Office of the State Archaeologist really needs to get done. So I would be happy to work with the committee as we keep moving forward to see if there's a way, if it doesn't fit into the grants criteria, if there's a way to make that
would you, work. Yeah. Representative Murphy, would you like to add that as an amendment to the that?
No, I don't want to earmark it or anything, but I would.
The conference committee report, we could have it as an amendment to the conference committee.
Mm-hmm. But I don't want to just drop it because I think the bones would be better returned to where they belong, more in the areas where they belong, I think, rather than in storage.
Mr. Kelleher, could you get together with Representative Murphy and
Mr. Chair, I'll
that drafted for
and while I'm sitting here in front of a microphone, I just want to say thanks to the committee and you for the support in the bill for history across the state. Thanks.
Thank you. Again, I would like to have questions for House File 707, the Legacy Bill. Representative Wagenius.
Oh, do I take it you're getting ready to vote?
No, not yet. Not quite.
Not yet.
Looking for discussion.
Okay. But then in the discussion part. Minnesotans are probably more concerned about the drinking water than anything else. So I am, on their behalf, concerned about the $8.8 million cut. I know folks in your community have had a nitrogen problem, and it's my understanding that your water comes from surface water. Folks in the state who have surface water, drinking water, which I do too, have not had support from the Minnesota Department of Health. We should be funding that kind of thing. It is my understanding that in your area, you use some wells to dilute the river water, which had too much pollutant in it, but you have no source water protection plan for that wellhead. And that's something that we need all over the state. We've just started working on that, yet we cut a lot of the funds that were cut exactly for what your community needs. Mine not so much, but there are other communities around here that need different things in drinking water, and it has not been a priority for this state. So I put that on the table because as these bills go through, I know there will be no negotiation, and it does seem that we've just got to say no to taking money from drinking water. If anything, this bill is short because we haven't talked about needs. We just talked about dollars. We haven't talked about what the need is out there for particularly rural Minnesota. And I find it ironic that this cut will hurt rural Minnesota way more than the wet metro area.
Thank you. Anybody else have any discussions on the bill? Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to compliment you on a fine piece of legislation and also compliment you on doing this bill in half the time of the previous chairman.
I didn't feel like I was in a race. Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is it's been a good committee, and I just want to give you credit for including many of us in your discussions and including stuff in the bill. There still is some problems. I'm still confused. I'm glad Representative Thiessen, you know, asked questions on the water stuff. It's a little like one of those little math puzzle things or a Rubik's Cube where you're just trying to figure out where all the money is going and what it's doing. And so I'm not sure we're quite there yet. And hopefully, you know, I know it's a work in process, and hopefully we can get to where it needs to go. You know, I've been really honored to serve on the LaSard committee, and I was kind of ribbing Chair Torgelson a little bit, but you know, I really respect the citizens' involvement and granted there's legislators on ours that vote, but it's just and I don't always agree with every project, and you some votes you win, some you lose, but I really believe in those processes, and so it's a little uncomfortable for me to see what we're doing in some of the clean water, and it's not like it's going to all bad things. I was talking to the speaker, and he says, "Well, is it bad?" Well, it's, you know, like on some of the LaSard. Well, is it not necessarily bad, but it's, you know, it's not
as
good
as it could be,
right? So, you know, it's hard to say it's all terrible, but there's a lot of good things, and you know, this, you look around the crowd, and you know, we're lucky as members to hear all these different projects, and there's so many neat things, and you know, we don't really even talk about arts today, but there's all sorts of neat projects that go all over the state with arts, and you know, and the library money, you know, there's just so many different projects that are good. So I mean, it's kind of a nice problem that we have, and the voters continue. The former senator mentioned, I think he said it was still has a 70% approval rating, and for 75, and that's a lot better than our approval rating, or certainly our president's. No, sorry, but you know, thank you for the projects and that you are including from both sides of the aisle, and you've been a pleasure with your staff to work with. So,
thank you very much, Representative Morganius. I also feel a little angst about the drinking water, and sometimes you have to deal with the hand you're dealt, and I would like to somehow hope that some way we could get some more money to take care of wellhead inspections and things like that. And I've appreciated your counsel on my particular situation in Fairmont. And seeing no other questions, I will renew my motion to have House File 707 as amended be referred to Ways and Means Committee. All in favor of that motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Thank you very much. I would like to thank the staff, Janelle Taylor, Brad Hagemeyer, John Waltz, and Mary Mullen, for all the wonderful work you did, and I appreciate it very much, and I don't know how I would have made it without you. So thank you very much. And our pages.
So very well.